Many CBC listeners will be familiar with Pauline Dakin. She was a longtime award-winning health reporter for the CBC and the former host of Atlantic Voice here in the Maritimes. She's now teaching journalism at King's College in Halifax. Pauline has written a fascinating book about her childhood spent running from the mob. The revelation of that as an adult and her thirst for the truth makes Run, Hide, Repeat a real page-turner. And we reached Pauline recently. Hi, Pauline. It's great to speak with you.
Hi, Angela. Good to talk to you.
This is quite a story. It talks, your book, a lot about being uprooted as a child, your mom taking you and your brother on vacations, not coming back, or deciding to move, but you're not allowed to tell anyone. And every move that you made, a father-like figure named Stan, who was a minister who canceled your mom, always moved to the same area. What were you told about those moves?
Well, as a child, there were no good answers. We're moving. Why? Well, you know, this is just something we need to do, and we'll tell you more when you're older. My brother and I always assumed it was something to do with my parents' divorce. It was not a good divorce. But when I was 23, my mother called me one day. I was working at the Telegraph Journal in St. John, and she called me and said, okay, you've had a lot of questions. I'm going to tell you some stuff. So let's meet at this motel and I'll tell you some things. So she and this man you mentioned, who was sort of a longtime family friend and supporter, his name was Stan, they met me at this motel and told me that what had been going on for all those years was that our families were on the run from the mafia.
What first went through your mind when you heard that?
It can't be true.
Yeah.
It's too crazy. This could never really. And I mean, the story was very complex, you know, and we were on the run from the mafia, but Stan had become involved in this covert anti-organized crime task force that had been, you know, providing protection and coverage for our families, had, you know, saved our lives multiple times. And I'm thinking, you couldn't keep that a secret. How could you ever, if that existed? And he said, no, only the Privy Council is aware of it, and it's administered mm-hmm. through the military. So I'm saying that I'm a journalist. I don't think you could keep this a secret. But then, you know, I had to really weigh what I knew about these two people. Stan was like a dad to me. My mom was, you know, the most honest person. She always used to say, you know, Pauline, if we don't have trust, we don't have anything. As I was, yeah. You know, a misbehaving teenager, I knew that honesty was sort of the primary value in our household. And I just could not picture either one of them lying. So even though I, you know, always kind of harbored these doubts, I guess I agreed within myself to accept the story and live with it.
And they talked about something called the weird world.
Yes. So this was part of that kind of shadowy, anti-organized crime world. There was sort of a penal system, very separate from the one that we know on the outside. So this was, the weird world was inside. It was where mafia people went to be imprisoned after they were arrested. They were tried by military tribunals secretly. And the weird world was also a place where people like my family, who'd somehow gotten caught up with the mafia and were in danger, could retreat to. You could go inside to a kind of protective custody and live your life in there. And in fact, you know, my mother was telling me the story at 23 because she had decided that she was going to go inside to protective custody.
And at one time, you thought you would go too.
I did. When I left that motel room, I went back to my life and just couldn't. I mean, I knew this crazy stuff and I couldn't talk to anybody about it. It was incredibly isolating. And I eventually, after a period of time, decided that's it. I can't live like this. I'm going to go inside too. And I, you know, I was told that I could live, you know, a fairly full life inside and that there would be projects for me to work on. And so
I guess it's hard for the reader to understand, Pauline, how it is that you did, even at any point, believe in all of this. But I guess it comes back to what you were talking about, that trust you had in the honesty of your mother and your relationship that you had with this man, which he was a wonderful father-like figure for you. Mm-hmm. You had no reason to doubt them.
No, they were the two people in my life who had always been there for me. He was a United Church minister. He had psychology training of some kind. And, you know, I saw him doing such good things in the world. I saw both of them doing such good things in the world. I just could not conceive of either one of them trying to trick me or, you know, fool us. You know, we were still running sometimes. I'd get a phone call and say, look, we got to get out of town. Something's coming. It's dangerous. There aren't enough protectors to keep you safe. And during those times the three of us were together running, I began to notice inconsistencies or little patterns that really increased my doubts. And finally, I thought, I have to know. I just have to know. My whole life is on hold here. So I called my mother and I said, my house has been broken into. What should I do? She said to me, well, you know, our friend is here, because you couldn't speak frankly on the phone in case mm-hmm. it was bugged. So I'll let you know. And I sat waiting for the phone call back, and it was just excruciating. And then that call came, and the answer was, yes, our guys have picked up some people who broke into your house, and they'd been watching you, and they had pictures of you, and so on. And in that moment, I just knew none of it was true. Because there had been no break-in. And so I could now look back and see instances of things that had happened that were kind of held up as examples of the mafia at work in our lives. And I knew that it wasn't the case.
How does it make you feel to think that your whole life has been shaped by really a form of mental illness?
I struggled with that a lot for a very long time. I didn't know right away that Stan had mental illness. And so it was just a few years ago that I was reading a medical journal article on something called delusional disorder, and it was like lights went on. And I was able to diagnose him based on that article. And it's a very, very rare condition, far more rare than schizophrenia. Although it could be underdiagnosed, because these are not people who go looking for help. They appear completely normal in most cases. And the more intelligent they are, the more they are able to sort of build these, logical, if unlikely, delusions. And they can be very convincing. And so I called the author of this article, who is a professor of psychiatry at Harvard University in Boston. And he was fascinated to hear the story. And we spent a long time on the phone talking about it. And he said, yeah, you're right. And he said, it was very funny. He said, the guy who's actually written the book on this, he's the real expert. He's seen more of these patients than anybody. I think he's somewhere in your neck of the woods, like Dalhousie. And I thought, what odds? And so I looked him up. He's professor emeritus of psychiatry at Dalhousie, Alistair Munro. And we met and talked, and he confirmed it as well. And I have to say, Angela, knowing that was like a huge weight being lifted. I didn't have to be angry. I didn't have to hate him for what he'd done to my family. And I could forgive him and my mother and not be so caught up in all those questions. It was a relief.
Thank you so much for sharing it, Pauline. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Angela.
Former CBC journalist Pauline Dakin is the author of Run, Hide, Repeat.